Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello and welcome to the Niall O'Neill podcast. It's myself and Andrea Cleary back once again on a summer vibe this week. Andrea, how are you?
I'm good, Niall. Thank you very much.
Good, good. You've been jet setting.
I've been jet setting.
For your summer.
Yeah, I've been on my my pastry tour of the Netherlands. I had a lovely time.
Nice.
I was away last week, hence why we didn't have a podcast, but you put out the Indie Sleaze podcast I saw in my feed.
I did, yes.
That we did with Louise McSharry.
We have so many podcasts now in the bank that we can do the the clip show, as it were, or the replay aspect. Because, you know, that's the whole point of this. We're like, today's podcast will be a podcast you could listen to at any point in the last 3 years or the next 4 years, whatever it is. Because it's what
people in the marketing world call evergreen content.
Evergreen. Today, we're going to be talking about a genre of music called Balearic music. And I'm going to explore what that is and why I wanted to talk about it. And I've learned a lot in the last few days about Balearic music. But first, I'm going to play, to set the mood, just a little bit of a song you might have heard before. It's a song associated with the idea of Balearic music. Let's set the scene for a little bit. This is a song called Stop Bajan by Tulio d'Episcopo.
Ma non è come brutta sta comale lì, e allora uè, tieni la me, per chi non si fa male riesce a nasa me, e si pierda facendo su un guai e mo, e allora che ci fa, e allora che ci fa, ehi!
So, Andrea, do you know anything about Balearic music?
Not a thing, Niall. Not a thing.
You're the ideal companion on this guide. So, what is Balearic music?
Well, take me on a journey.
It's hard to describe and it's hard to explain, but I'm going to go through a lot of things that explain why we talk about that word. Originally, when I thought we might do an episode about Balearic music, it was because it was summer and it was really nice out and it's been raining and lashing here the last while. So, kind of feeling less summery, but still I thought it was worth doing it. The term Balearic, it originated in Ibiza one of the Balearic Islands, probably from the summers of 1984 to 1989. It was really made a thing by one particular DJ, and that was a guy called Alfredo Fiorito, who DJed at a club called Amnesia in Ibiza during the 80s. And far from being this, you know, house and techno super zone that Ibiza has now become, back then it was a bit more innocent. It was before, you know, TV shows about lagerlouts on holidays were being shot in on the island or on the Balearic Islands, way before that. It was a much more innocent time. Ibiza as a place is a kind of an interesting, has an interesting history. Obviously, it's full of super clubs now, but right when there's a lot of people still go there. But it's maybe its heyday and probably the most influential time was during the 80s. Our pal Kino Crivon did an episode about Balearic music recently and also, in a way, struggled to figure out exactly what it is, because for many people, Balearic is kind of a shorthand for evocative music. It's down-tempo, sits in Mediterranean climates, kind of chilled out, a little bit cheesy maybe, a bit sun-kissed, easy listening almost. So it's not really something that is one thing, but it's kind of like, in a way, Balearic is a feeling. It's a sensibility. It's a thing that happens on a dance floor. It's a sound that can be evoked. Kian says, if you heard Alfredo play U2's I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For at Sunrise at Amnesia, it was a Balearic record. If you hear it in almost any other context, it is one of U2's biggest singles. So that's really what it's about. It's about context in which music is played. Here's a bit more from the revered DJ, DJ Harvey, talking about Balearic music.
Balearic music, okay, there's let me think. There's some islands in the Mediterranean called the Balearic Islands, one of which is Ibiza. And Ibiza's been party central for about 2,000 years. The music which had become the signature sound of the slightly more sophisticated Ibizencan scene has become known as Balearic music. It's hard. I suppose I could play you 10 Balearic records and then maybe you'd have an idea of the vibe or the feeling. It's slightly softer, slightly more dreamy, again more down-tempo, kind of European sounding dance music. But in general, it's music that had become popular in the Balearic Islands during the 80s. Now this has a European flavor, electronic beats, and it's a little bit cheesy, which is kind of one of a good ingredient towards Balearic music.
Okay, so that is DJ Harvey, a bit of a Ibiza legend himself and still a DJ going strong at this point. And explaining what Balearic music is. And like he said, it was popular. It's music popularized originally in the Balearic Islands. And it's a lot about the context in which it was played. So it's not like it's a genre of music. It's about listening to music in that kind of context, in that kind of fancy, nice sun-kissed place. It's a term I like because it encapsulates an eclectic kind of anything goes approach to DJing, and that's something which I have always appreciated. I think a lot of people, and we're all guilty of it as DJs, we fall into like playing the same kind of stuff all the time or sticking to a BPM or a grid. And I think Balearic, whether it was through accident or design or out of necessity, it was something that didn't kind of wasn't a slave to the rhythm necessarily. It was music that could have been any sort of music, really. There was a dance music writer called Frank Chope who says, put it simply, it's pop music that sounds good on pills. And that's part of the reason why this has become such a revered thing, because you had to understand Balearic music, kind of have to go back to what it was, that the context in which it was played. And of course, like Argentinian DJ Alfredo Fiorito, began a residency at the Amnesia Club in 1984, just as the club got an all-night license. And it says at the same time that, are you familiar with the documentary on Netflix that was about a cult in Ohio called Wild Wild Country?
Yes, I've seen
it. So, yeah, apparently that cult, which was the leader, was Bhagwan Sri Ragnish, a.k.a. Osho. They had outposts around the world, and apparently before everything went tits up there in their compound, they were basically had suitcases of ecstasy, because apparently a lot of people, even though they were anti-drugs in that cult, some members had started using MDMA or ecstasy as part of their therapy sessions. And in 1985, Bhagwan's Oregon headquarters, Cum City, was shut down amid accusations of infighting and conspiracies to commit bioterrorism and murder. And by this time, there was hundreds of these centers around the world, these Bhagwan centers, from Ibiza to Portland, Bondi to Berlin. Many ran nightclubs and discos and staffed by the people who were involved in it. And either the profits were sent back to the centers or Oregon, depending on who you talk to, were funneled back to America possibly, but also could have just been a way to generate revenue for the people who were running these things. There is a writer called Helen Donlan who had a book on Ibizan culture called Shadows Across the Moon, and said that it was through these itinerants that the use of the MDMA in Ibiza's first club phenomenon. The academic anthropologist Tony Andrea studied the Bhagwans in Ibiza and said where they were a crucial bridge between Ibiza's 60s counterculture and 90s electronic dance subculture. In a piece in Vice magazine, D'Andrea was interviewed and said, they introduced MDMA, the Bhagwans introduced MDMA to Ibiza, but we're not alone. The gay community and hippie new age scene and the party jet setters were also using MDMA in Ibiza around the same time. Drugs were just one ancillary element of their experimental lifestyle, not just an economic endeavor. More often than not, members shared drugs for free whenever possible, which was particularly true in Ibiza. Another author called Stephen Armstrong, in his book The White Island of the History of Ibiza, told Vice that Ibizan Bhagwans took up dealing out of economic necessity when the Oregon headquarters went down and the worldwide movement crumbled. All they had was their clothes and a cupboard full of MDMA. So the idea that the sudden success of MDMA is down to a cult collapsing in Oregon or in America is an idea that persists to this day. Very hard to quantify at the same time, but at the same, what is something that is very intriguing, you know, something falls in one part of the world and something else happens in another part of the world, therefore helping to create a dance culture that we still talk about now, that is now a multi-billion dollar industry. So there's a great book called Last Night a DJ Saved My Life, Bill Brewster and Bill Broughton. And if you don't have it, it's one of those ones that you should have. Yeah, and I take it out and read every now and again, because it's got a history of dance music from the start of whatever, the 1930s or something, all the way up to present day, taken into different genres and all sorts. So a really great read. And in that book, they talk about how Ibiza has always been a place for people to seek sanctuary in many ways. It'd been a refuge for people like the Romans, Arabs, the Vandals and the Catalans, Jews escaping persecution, draft dodging Americans, pop star looking for a limelight free party, as well as religions and cults. So as they've all washed up here. Before its development as a tourist resort, Ibiza relied heavily on its income for the salt flats that made it the White Island. Its allure for many settlers was precisely that it was so backwards and isolated. And indeed, the airport in Ibiza was only built in 1967. So it really was a far-flung place. And film stars like Errol Flynn, Ursula Andress were regular visitors. Pink Floyd recorded the soundtrack to Barbette Schroeder's 1969 film More on the Island, and that brought a load of more counterculture pilgrims to those places. So in a way, that kind of helps explain why Ibiza's club scene has a bit of a hippie roots. It has that kind of thing that's going on. It's not just people flocking commercially to an island to take advantage of it. There is a hippie kind of dropout culture in the background, which also makes its way a lot into this story in a way, because there's a lot of psychedelic rock and things like that that gets played in the early years in Ibiza. Also, the gay community found out there was a place that they could exist and without and hold hands without fear of assault. So in 1960, the island's Ibiza's hotels reported 30,000 visitors. By 1973, the numbers had reached 500,000. And it only grew from there. So back to Alfredo. He is the DJ that is most associated with Balearic music. So before the UK lads on tour in Ibiza were having epiphanies on the drug and became evangelists for dance music and Ibiza as a place, people who were just there who loved music and people who had discovered Ibiza as a place, there was an unknown raver in a piece in Mixmag said about this time, I was at Amnesia watching Alfredo play Off My Tits on MDMA in 1988. All I wanted to do was get everyone I'd ever met on it. I have to admit that I went a bit weird for a bit. I thought I was going to change the world, make things fairer, bring us all together for a bit. So that was kind of the evangelist part of it. And then what happened was a lot of people would go, because they heard it was this amazing place and things, these amazing things happened. And one of those people that was kind of instrumental in terms of the soundtrack is Alfredo. He had a knack for choosing tracks that were individually kind of unremarkable, but as a whole, as part of a DJ set, he weaved them together in a way that sounded like a journey, like a spectacular idea of a DJ set. So just kind of songs that shouldn't fit well together but do. And that's often what Balearic really is referred to. Alfredo is referred to as the father of the Balearic beat. He was from Argentina originally. He trained to become a journalist and eventually worked as a music critic on a newspaper. But in 1976, at age 23, he emigrated to Spain before moving to Ibiza. He spent a couple of years working as a candle maker, delivery driver, and a fashion designer in Ibiza, and working as a barman in a place called Bebop. And that bar was equipped with a couple of turntables and a mixer. And in 1982, he began DJing. And a year later, he became a DJ at Amnesia in 1983. Now, Amnesia was kind of an underground venue on the island at this time. He started in 83. It was a private party. And at first, his music sets, the sets that he actually played, were kind of a mix of house, disco, and pop, but they weren't well received at all. He persisted nevertheless, and in the next year or so began to draw crowds to what he was doing, leading to a 6-year residency and a very influential part of the music story in Ibiza. So what did he play? Well, Alfredo's music was eclectic and diverse, and he played all sorts of stuff, but I can tell you some stuff that he really enjoyed playing. Pop and soulful music from the time, a lot of stuff like Sade, Talking Heads, Billy Idol, Simply Red, he really liked Susie and the Banshees. He liked European electronic music and industrial music in the later years from Belgium, stuff like New Beat. Also loved psychedelic rock and music from the 60s and 70s, Latin grooves, reggae, Nina Simone. Played a lot of Sade, but he was also known for dropping stuff like the Pink Panther theme in a DJ set. So, you know, not something that people would do these days, but there's something about maybe the island that suggests that the Pink Panther theme. I mean, you imagine just you're in a club and all of a sudden this comes on. Yeah, so that's Henry Mancini's Pink Panther theme, of course. But more likely than not, if you go back, there's actually a lot of recordings of his sets on YouTube. You'd hear stuff like this from Shadow. But as I said, Alfredo had a very eclectic mix of music that he played. And one song he played an awful lot was a song called Why, a live version, actually, by a band called The Wooden Top, which were kind of a punky DIY band. And this is what that sounded like. Why, why, why? Why, why, why? So the Wooden Tops were actually a band from the north of England in Northampton. So not really very sun-kissed or Balearic in any way, what typically people would think. But yeah, that is some examples. I'm going to play some more a bit later on, maybe some of the more obvious ones that become Balearic staples since then. But yeah, there's a Alfredo playlist on Spotify at the moment if you want to have a look at more of the stuff that he played. As you can hear there, he liked a lot of smooth jazz sax. Kind of cheesy music, very melodic stuff. But I think that's what I really liked about DJs in that time. It's not something that is really tolerated anymore. It's like an anything goes kind of feeling of you can play whatever you want. And maybe at that point, because now that like DJs have access to everything that's recorded at a quick click of a button, back then, and you know it, if like I DJ vinyl every now and again in bars and places like Hang Dye, and sometimes it depends on literally how much you bring is depending on how much you can actually play. If you find yourself not having not brought enough music or something like that, you'll often just be like, I think I'll check the B-side on this and just see if there's any on this that I can play. And I think that's a lot what happened with Ibiza DJs as well, because they were playing late into the night until the sunrise came up. And so they needed to perform long sets, and with a scarcity of records to play, they had to be resourceful. And that means really digging deep on what they already have and exploring mainstream albums to uncover hidden and lesser known tracks, not the big hits of the day. And we're going to play a few more of those in a bit. So kind of those songs became unique gems. There was a lot of kind of music from very well-known artists that were played, like Queen and stuff like that, but you wouldn't have necessarily know the song unless you knew the album. And yeah, that was something that a guy called Jose Padilla, who was a very legendary chill-out DJ at Ibiza, said, there was not much choice. It's not because in Ibiza we like to play like that. We have to play Talk Talk. We have to play Belgian New Beat. We have to play rock. We have to play reggae because we have to fill the space of so many hours. And that was the kind of vibe back then. So that kind of led this to this eclecticism of music at the time that became very obvious to you know, people who were going there and suddenly realizing, oh, this is something that's completely different than what we're used to at home. And so yeah, that had a lot to do with it. Yeah, I mean, not that Alfredo was the only person to play this kind of music as well. Like I said, Jose Padilla says that as well. There was a guy called Jean-Claude Maury who played in, kind of cut his teeth in the 70s discos in Brussels. He brought a lot of weird electro Belgian influence too with him. There was an Italian DJ in a place called Coup on Ibiza called Massimo Max Zucchelli. And he was very revered by other DJs. There was other DJs like Juan Carlos, Gerardo, Patrick Landy. We're all mixing, matching and cross-fertilizing throughout the 80s, early to mid 80s specifically. There was a British guy called Trevor Fung who was kind of popularized a lot of this stuff in Britain. He'd been playing Ibiza since the start of the decade and credits Juan Carlos actually as the another DJ who was playing that, a lot of that music. And then like you can see then how the influence of all that kind of stuff with drugs, with MDMA suddenly becoming this, and presumably it was quite strong MDMA that was in on the island at the time. So what would happen is people would go, they'd have these kind of amazing experiences that they weren't expecting. They would hear this music that they weren't expecting, and they took that back. So I guess the idea, the kind of narrative that we've heard most in terms of an Irish audience is the UK one and the Summer of Love, the second Summer of Love that happened in 1988, which wouldn't have happened without DJs like Alfredo on Ibiza. In September 1987, London Club and pirate DJs like Nicky Holloway, Paul Oakenfold, Danny Rampling and Johnny Walker had their first experiences of taking ecstasy in Ibiza and hearing this kind of music. And then they went home and they started clubs and they started taking this idea back with them. And that happened all across Europe as well. So much so that in probably like 87, 88 was the real tectonic shift in terms of music. This, because Balearic as an idea started becoming this kind of conversation that was happening around the rest of Europe. So that is to say, while there is no specific Balearic hits or songs, it's more the idea or the feeling, idea of an anything goes approach in terms of influences that happens. There is a journalist called Joe Muggs who says, listen now to mid-80s DJ recordings and you'll see why the crowd of jet setters, pop stars, hippies, urchins, dropouts, and weirdos from across Europe revered Alfredo and the other DJs. There was no technical trickery to the mixing, but their pacing and choices draw you in. 1 minute it'll be Simply Red and Sade, and you're wondering how it's different from oldies radio. And then you realize you're nodding your head to something completely alien, or which shouldn't make sense, but yet does. The old cliche of a DJ taking the audience on a journey is made vividly real, but it's not hypnotic electronics or slamming bass lines. It's Spandau Ballet and TV cop show themes getting you there. It doesn't matter if a track was a million seller or a mega rarity. If it fits, then it fits. So in many ways, Balearic was an attitude as well. Yeah, as an example of what was happening around Europe at that time, and because of the necessity of playing music, that you, whatever you could get your hands on. A lot of the times what would happen is that, you know, something, a DJ like Alfredo might be playing a song, they might slow it down on the record player. And so there's, here's an example that something that is credited with emerging in Belgium as this kind of new beat style. A song called A Split Second by Flesh, and it's slowed down from 45 RPM to 33 and pitch shifted. And it's, here's the original bit. Here's the original song. So yeah, you can hear it's more spacious. There's more time there. It chugs along differently. Certainly the kind of music that sounds good in the sunshine and became its own thing. So songs being played at a different speed. But there was also stuff like The Thrashing Doves, a song called Jesus on the Payroll that Alfredo liked to play a lot. I got a mic on my head like a mic cake. I scrub and I scrub. So Alfredo liked all sorts of stuff, and in his later years he would play a lot of music that was more traditional dance music as well. I'll give you some examples of that in a bit. But also, like, he played a lot of offbeat stuff like the Wooden Tops' YYY, which was a song he found in Italy in a record shop. He was in Madrid. An American dealer saw him his first house track, which was Donnie by The It on DJ International, the label. He said he went mad for that record. This is just fantastic music. So when he would go out, he would go and buy whatever he could find. And Wooden Tops YYY is one of those songs that became known as a very Balearic song, even though there's nothing Balearic in terms of how it sounds. But he bought Thrashing Doves, Jesus on a Payroll in a store in Valencia as well. So these were records that we would play. A lot of those people who went in the summer of 87 from the UK went home and actually started club nights called Shoom, which was Danny Rempling's thing, Future, which Paul Oakenfold ran, Trip, and Nicky Holloway. And then you're talking about how it kind of lends into the Hacienda Acid House era, which Mike Pickering and Graham Park were running in terms of DJing, and kickstarting the UK's club culture in terms of the Second Summer of Love and what happened after that with warehouse raves and being shut down illegally and all that kind of stuff. So all of this stuff is connected, and I think that's what's really interesting about it to me. And that's what I think for me is what, like, a lot of what I love about conversations around music culture and dance culture and how it works in terms of history is that people respond and they have conversations with the past and the present and different places as well, which is kind of something we don't really have as much of anymore, because the way that it works, we can hear anything instantly. So we don't have this kind of like like your this intrepid explorer who's gone to the Mediterranean and come back to your dark and desolate city and bringing a lot of sunshine tunes with you. So the other thing, you know, in terms of Balearic music, I'll play some examples now, but there's some compilations which you might be interested in. A lot of the music was vaguely psychedelic. As I played the slowdown stuff there, it was kind of spacious music with beats that made its way to compilations like Balearic Beats, which was compiled by Trevor Fung, who was the DJ on Ibiza, who played a lot in during the 80s. Danny Rampling asked him to make that. So that wasn't house music necessarily. It was songs that co-opted from other genres for dance music because they sounded good. Like the original guy said, it sounded good on pills at the time. And what came after that, what other people might associate with Ibiza, is a Café Del Mar, which is became this million selling brand. But what Café Del Mar actually started with was a bar that opened in 1980 to play chill out music to accompany the sunsets, and they sold food as well. I'm sure a lot of people didn't eat the food there, but it did open in the 80s because it was on the water and had a nice place to be. And so
did they serve pints of water and chewing gum?
I'm sure they did. But that's what happened with, like, that became synonymous with a kind of a slowed down, different kind of down tempo stuff. And that's often thought of as Balearic as well, because it comes from Ibiza. Mm. So here's a song from The Art of Noise, which you might have heard at 6 a.m., 7 a.m. at Café Del Mar during the 80s. Very chilled, very down tempo. That's a song from 1984. There's also this song, Sweet Lullaby, from Deep Forest, you might know. Kind of the vibe of the Café Del Mar compilations, which was in a way is Balearic as well. And you know, like I said, music would go off and traverse around Europe, would crop up in different places, and with the same kind of sensibility, with Belgian new beat, Italian cosmic disco, and particularly in terms of slowing down a record, that would be something that happened. And then in the UK, the likes of Happy Mondays, Primal Scream, and The Beloved create a whole Balearic influence in the kind of dance culture. Acts that were neither indie or dance that were popular then were acts like Saint Etienne or The Grid, kind of more down-tempo, emotive music. And then the success of Ibiza made sure that what it became popularized for was no longer the popular sound of the day, with kind of more banging trance and prog house music of the mid to late 90s mega clubs was thought of as Balearic too. So before I play some more Balearic classics, all right, so here's some more examples of songs which fit the Balearic mold, not necessarily as we discussed. It's a kind of a feeling, it's an idea, but these are the songs, I think, the original idea of Balearic music is music that Alfredo would have played. So here are some examples. One that I have a particular fondness for, a song from Phil Collins called I'm Not Moving. This one might be very obvious for why it's called, why it's a Balearic song. It's La Isla Bonita by Madonna. Also a Cure song called The Blood, which was a Alfredo favorite. What can never come back? You can never a song from La Bellini called Satan. And
puoi sentirmi ricadere per bruciare poi volare. Satan love. Lui mi sbatte e mi accarezza con due gocce di dolcezza. Mezzo angelo e anima.
Next one is a Lumo favorite by Chris Rea called Josephine.
Josephine, I'll send you all my love. Every single step that I take.
That's the French edit of Josephine by Chris Rea. I would imagine now that would sound pretty good with the sun coming up at any time of day or night. But yeah, particularly. And like I said, a lot of album tracks and stuff were kind of the vibe back then in terms of tunes that became popular. Here's a Queen song called Cool Cat.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Boy, I'm wishing and hoping and waiting to really hit the big time. But did it happen? Happen? No, you're speeding too fast. Slow down, slow down. You better slow down.
Is a song that's covered a lot by various people. It's called Going Back to My Roots. This is the Richie Havens version, which was played a lot by Alfredo as well.
The place in my bird.
And a kind of a quieter vibe, a song from the Style Council and Long Hot Summer.
I play out my role, I've even been out walking. Tell me that it helps, but I know when I'm beaten.
Now, in his later years, Alfredo would play a lot more traditional house or dance music. Here's a couple of classics he would have played called Here's Strings of Life by Derek May.
Here's
And finally, we could go on for hours with this, but this is a final kind of dancey track that he would have played, a song I love, from Gat Decor called Passion the Nakedness. So, in answer to the original question I set out to answer, what is Balearic music? Well, I think the best term in which to, best way to think about Balearic music is, it was music that DJs like Alfredo on Ibiza in the 80s played. It was soft, it was jazzy, it was cheesy, it was Mediterranean, it was dreamy, it was psychedelic, it was pop, it was soul, it was psychedelic rock, it was all sorts. But also now it's become this other thing, and that's what happens with genres, right? They become this other thing, they become a shorthand for something else. Probably a good example of how that works is if you think about, there's a lot of compilations out there that have the word Balearic in it. The original one I mentioned, Balearic Beats. If you're interested in Cian Ó Cuimhne, who I mentioned at the top of the thing, top of the podcast, has a Balearic special that he did in June. And you can listen to that on SoundCloud. I'll put that in the show notes as well. Again, a lot inspired by Alfredo and people's choices. A lot of stuff that we played in there is in there, along with stuff like Billy Idol and The Waterboys. The Hold the Moon was another kind of tune that was played. Herb Alpert, Vangelis, Carly Simon, stuff like that is in there. Then there's compilations that I am familiar with. There's one called Ritmo Fantasia, Balearic Spanish Synth Pop, Boogie and House from 1982 to 1992. So more the Spanish flavor. Colleen Cosmo Murphy, who's actually playing here Saturday in Hyndai, has a couple of volumes of a compilation called Balearic Breakfast. So very much this kind of vibe. And then the Balearic Beats compilation, which I meant. But there's Balearica is everywhere. It's absolutely, it's there when you know where to look. And it can be felt in Norway, in the electronic disco scene, with people like Lindstrom and Todd Terrier and Todd Terrier and Prince Thomas, people like that. So it's absolutely everywhere. There's a lot of this music, which kind of informed Italo Disco, which is one of our favorites as well. And so there's all sorts of stuff, and people like DJ Harvey, who still play that kind of music a lot. And something which, you know, as I'm one third of Lumo Club, it's something we, without maybe realizing, we've always kind of gravitated towards. It's that kind of sound. It's like, I love that eclecticism. We've always described Lumo as a house party in a club, because when we started, we intended it just to be a good tunes club and not one that's like just literally, you know, the beats. But it is hard to kind of keep that. And I think it's a celebration. Balearic is a celebration of eclecticism and anything goes, and breaking the rules. And I think that's can only be a good thing. So that's it. Does that explain to you a little bit more what I said? To set out that was Balearic music.
That was amazing. I have, I think, loads of questions.
Oh, great.
About it, or wonderings, you know, because I think, you know, a lot of it, or a lot of what you were talking about there, is specifically kind of Ibiza kind of sound, and what we kind of know about, like, the Ibiza sound. I can't pronounce the name of that island. I never know whether
Ibiza.
To lean into the Ibiza. Z or do the TH sound. Don't want to offend anybody, so I'll just avoid saying it. But I guess, like, so the phrase Balearic music I find really interesting, because obviously these islands have natives, and what we're talking about here is mostly people who aren't native to the island coming to the island and playing music to people who aren't native to the island. So has there ever been like a kind of a backlash or a conversation around like the term Balearic music and how that might like take away something from like there being like you know, traditional music of these islands, which I can imagine with like flamenco and a different kind of Spanish traditional styles of music and dance. Like, yeah. Has there ever been a kind of a clash there between those things?
Or I'm sure there is, but because it's been there for so long. But what I mean, I went to Ibiza once, and as part of one of the parties that Seth Troxler had put on, we were there with a brand, Absolute at the time, and they brought us there, and it was great, like, because it's an expensive place to be. But funny you mentioned flamenco, and because at one of the parties, the daytime parties that he had on, one of the singers from the Gypsy Kings was there, and he was playing some tunes. So there was kind of an effort to include some of the music. He lives on the island, and the singer or the guitarist from the Gypsy Kings. So there was an effort to include him in that, and it was interesting to see that, and wasn't something I was expecting when I got to there. But, and I'm sure there's lots of, like, there's parts of Ibiza which are completely untouched by the commercialist aspect of what it's become as well. And there's people that just live there as well.
I'm curious about how people feel about, you know, because it's obviously a very important part of like music history, and particularly like dance music history. But it's sort of, you know, that the fact that there are locals on these islands that don't necessarily engage with the kind of highly commercial or like the drug taking and all of the stuff that, you know, a lot of us Europeans and Americans kind of know Ibiza for, and how they interact, I suppose, not necessarily how they feel about it, but like how they interact with the idea of this being Balearic music, if it's something that they, you know, accept and embrace and interact with, or if it's something that they just feel like, oh well, that's not our music, it's the other Ibiza, do you know. I'd be so interested to kind of learn more about that. But but also I guess my other like question or comment on it is that, like, what you said at the beginning about it not having a particular sound is like, seems so, like, with the variety of the clips that you played there, I'm like, yeah, like how do all of these things add up to a sound or a scene? And it's that thing of like the family resemblance idea. I think it's like a Wittgenstein idea of like, you can have a group of things together and you can but you can't categorize them as having the same characteristics. But you know, A will share a characteristic with B, and B will share a characteristic with C, and like it's they're all together because they don't share the same characteristic, but they'll each share like a little bit with one another. And that's really, really interesting, because I think that approach to DJ sets is something that I'm far more interested in than as opposed to like the kind of the focus on beats. Because I know when I was going to clubs when I was younger, it was very focused on kind of just maintaining a certain BPM and you know, keeping people dancing as quickly as possible. And I know that while I was kind of going on those journeys in the club, I would have really liked to have like a sort of a slow down moment, or you know, like a bit of a chill out moment, or a bit more of a focus on like the euphoric side of whatever activities you might be engaging in, instead of just the like very frenetic, like moving your body sort of thing, you know?
Yeah, here's an argument for the extension of Ireland's licensing hours and dance floor hours in particular. The reason that a lot of this stuff that we play now in clubs is fast and quick is because we only have 4 hours to do it, and people are people are never there for the 4 hours. They're there for 2.5, 2 if you're lucky, and 3 if you're even luckier. So people play stuff, they bang it out, or whatever you want to call it. They play whatever they need to play to get a dance floor going. It's not about the space and time. Our licensing laws don't allow for that. And that means, that's why when these places opened until 8 a.m. in the morning or whatever it was, and as they do now in places like Berlin and Ibiza, where it just goes and goes and goes, like you have time and space to do that. You have time in which to take people on a, I'm doing the inverted quote marks, on a journey, and do the things that are different to what we expect nowadays. But that's what happens. And especially interestingly, since the pandemic, there's been a much more emphasis on a higher BPM and like being faster music. And maybe it's a trend, and maybe it's something that we will see reverse, because now once something becomes so popular, like BPMs over 130 are where it's at for a lot of younger people now, because it's get in, get out, we're fizzy, we're doing stuff. And it could also be about the drugs they're taking as well, you know. It could be about like,
if the drugs change, ketamine use, or whatever it is.
It could be stuff like that, that, you know, make sure that the music you're listening to feels better, faster if you're into that mode. So, and that's just like how it works in terms of life and how socializing in clubs and stuff. People, if people are buzzing on something, they might want to hear something. But if they're a bit more relaxed.
I think that's so interesting that it's like, it's a product of our licensing laws that we have this kind of set BPM in clubs, because the DJ doesn't really get a chance to do that journey if they're trying to make sure that everybody that comes in is being attracted to the dance floor very quickly. Because if a group comes into a club and they're not attracted to the dance floor within like one or two songs, and they have other clubs that they have the option to go to, or they haven't paid in there or whatever it is, or they could just go to the smoking area and hang out and talk to one another, then they probably won't like venture onto the dance floor.
True.
If you have the space to like, of like, okay, we're going to go to this club, we're going to go at this time, we really like this DJ, it's like a trust thing with DJs. I find a lot of the time, like, I don't tend to go to DJs that I don't know, or who I don't trust to kind of like introduce me to new music, or, you know, pay attention to the vibe of the room, or, you know, try to steer everybody in a certain direction. And when I was going to clubs, those kinds of DJs for me personally were kind of few and far between. And that could have been, you know, I was going to the places that my friends wanted to go, my friends might have been on a different buzz to me, whatever it was. But I think that the idea of just slowing down a set entirely for like the Pink Panther theme tune, or like you were saying, like an 80s TV theme tune, something like that.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of trust that has to exist between
the absolutely
dance floor and the DJ.
And you know, if you're traveling to Ibiza and you're willing to put yourself into a situation where you're like, well, I'm not going home, I'm on holidays, I spent time and money and effort to be here, then that kind of leans into that being more exploratory in terms of being kinder onto what is happening, and maybe going, oh, I'll see how this goes, or this isn't what I normally do, I'm on holidays, kind of thing. And I also feel the same about DJ sets of festivals. It's often such a pity that you know, you bring in a big DJ over that people really want to see, and they get to play an hour and a half, and you're like, it's not really long enough, is it?
Yeah.
Like an hour and a half is nothing for a DJ at all. You're only getting started and you're finished. And then that truncates the journey aspect of it. Yeah, that truncates the journey aspect of it, where you're like, okay, now I can take it to a different place. But you can't really take things to a different place if you only have 90 minutes. Or worse, an hour. You're like, well, I can do one thing well for an hour, or I can do
and if you have a kind of a fair weather crowd that's like coming in and out and like coming along, like, oh, we'll check out what's going on, what's the vibe at this stage. But if they come in at like a part of the journey that where things are slowing down a little bit, or things are getting a bit more chill, or things are just getting a bit more strange, they mightn't necessarily feel like they want to stay there for that, or they mightn't feel included in the journey and stuff, which is, I think there's definitely something to be said for, like, you know, going to see a DJ in the same way that you go to see a band. You know, like a band does the same thing. They organize their set list so that they bring you on this journey. And like, something we don't do in this country is show up to the dance floor at the time when the DJ begins.
Yeah.
And I think that I always think that that's such a shame. Like, it's because it's kind of there's this feeling that it's quite uncool to be the first people on the dance floor. Unless you're a group of girls, we don't care. We love it. But it is this kind of like, it's
God
not
bless
cool.
those
like,
legends, the people that show up first and who don't go straight, like, don't go straight to the smoking area. That those are my favorite people.
But we do have that culture of like, oh, we're all like, you know, the group is really excited. We're going to have pre-drinks at somebody's house and the DJ starts at 11. But you never show up at 11 because that's seen as being like quite an uncool thing to do. It's like, no, we'll go
being on time
like
for the party
12.
Is not cool.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that is such a shame because you're missing, I guess, you know.
You know, well, I mean, honestly, sometimes... my favorite part of the night at Lumo is the first. If you get it right, can be the first. The tunes that you play, we always do a 20-minute warm-up each when there's three of us. And so 20 minutes each in different rotations. And sometimes that 20 minutes can be, I mean, it's a very short amount of time because it's essentially billed as a warm-up or half an hour maybe each. But can be great because it really is, there's no expectations on you. There's no, you don't have to play anything. You don't feel pressure to play any particular kind of music. And you can kind of just riff, and some of my favorite like little kind of mini sets almost have been like these things that I've kind of just put together on the fly that I'm like, wow, that was really good. I was really happy with that, but like no one's there to hear it. But like that's when you get to play the stuff
you
don't
feel pressure to play anything in particular. What does that pressure look like when you're further on into the set, like
a crowd of people staring at, looking at you dancing,
right?
Face at you.
Okay,
it's hard not sometimes
so
not to feel
what
like,
would that pressure you into doing? If you had like a full dance floor, would you be more likely to play?
You always want to keep people on a dance floor, don't you? It's human nature, right? Mm-hmm. The human nature, the heartbeat of a party keeps the party going, and the last thing you want to do. That's why it's so hard to like make that decision and brave almost to be like, right, I'm going to play the Pink Panther team now. No one's going to get this. But I want to do something different. And that's really hard to do because it breaks the mood. It changes the mood. And if you do something like that, it just changes everything. Unless you're a DJ who becomes known for that. Like a good example is Young Marco, the Dutch DJ. He's known for doing a lot of like dropping a lot of tracks that people are like, wow, that was a curveball. And like one of the things I saw him do on one of a Boiler Room set once was play Last Christmas at Deck Mantel in a festival in August. Do you know what I mean?
I mean,
a great song is a great song, even if it says Christmas in it. And you can still play it. But that's kind of like,
I think I would respond really well to that sort of risk taking. And I think that's probably because I've been on so many dance floors where you can nearly like predict what the next song is going to be or what the next style of song is going to be. And I don't know, I've always, even if it hasn't entirely worked for me in the moment, I've always respected a curveball.
Yeah.
Do you know?
It is something that we try to keep in mind, and it's something we try and do once a night at Lumo. We have Lumo on the Saturday in Tengu. But it's really hard. It's sometimes it's just not the right time, not the right place. Doesn't feel like the right crowd even sometimes. And you're like, well, I don't know if this is the right thing to do. And sometimes it's easier just not to do it than to actually do it. It is that kind of thing.
A lot of stuff you have to think about.
Yeah. I mean, there's constantly conversation in your head going on with what's actually happening. And then, all the other things, you're like, oh, make sure you look like you're having fun. I mean, when I started DJing, a few people were like, you don't look happy. I was like, okay, I'm just really freaked out because I'm, enjoying it, but also thinking about what's next. And then you're like, oh, well, you kind of have to perform a bit as well. And there's, but that's like DJing now is performative as well. It's like Boiler Room sets are like hands in the air and like leading the crowd and all that kind of stuff as well. And that's part of it. And there's nothing wrong with that either. But it's like James Murphy's a good example. He's playing All Together Now soon. And he's saying, like, don't come to me if you're expecting me to put my hands up in the air and like lead you. You're coming with me because the tunes I'm playing, not because of what I look like. And that's one of the reasons why I think this Baccio club that he did with Solwax, Too Many DJs, is a great thing, because there's a de-emphasis on putting a DJ on a platform and just being in the room. And I always liked that. And that was one of the, I'd love to have a venue where the DJ was just in a little spaceship or a little, like there's just a little crack where you can see the DJ's head. So you know that they're there, but you don't have to see them. Because that's part of, you know, what it is. People are looking at you instead of looking with their at their friends or dancing in a room facing one direction. There's no reason for that when it's a DJ, really, because if the DJ can't be seen half the time, or is there's smoke and mirrors and lights and whatever else. But and that's what Despacio did so well, because it was like the DJ is over there. They're not promoting themselves visibly. They are there. You can see them. But they are behind a I guess they're behind, in a booth, basically. But the focus was on this big dance floor, which is surrounded by sound systems or speakers, which are Macintosh speakers, which are ultra powered, ultra high powered. And the difference there that year when it was at Electric Picnic, I think it was 2015, people were just dancing in the room together. They weren't dancing at the DJ. They weren't looking at the DJ for the cue of what's next. They were just listening to the music and enjoying the lights.
I find that really interesting, because I often, I like to have the DJ, I like to have a kind of like, the DJ to me is kind of like the North Star. Like if you're dancing and you're kind of in your zone, or you're dancing with your friends or whatever, it is good sometimes to break out of whatever circle you're in, or whatever way you are kind of in your head with the music, to kind of break out of it, look towards the DJ, like either in recognition of a really good song choice, or just like a thank you, or just as a way to kind of orient yourself and kind of like center yourself or ground yourself in the fact that this music is being curated for you and performed.
Yeah.
But I suppose that's just me as like a club goer. I like to have the DJ to look at, because often there's stuff going on in the club that like might be distracting me from the music, or you know, some guys in your ear trying to talk to you while you're trying to listen to music or something. So I always find it really nice to have the DJ to look at. But I also definitely respect the idea that not all DJs will want to be performers. I know we're getting way off topic with like
Balearic music, but I mean,
I'm so interested in DJs as performers. And like, I read a lot about women DJs and how the performance of, you know, their gender is so much a part of what the performance that they're, you know, taking part in is made up of and things like that. So, and that's something that you see, like, you know, with Daft Punk with the helmets, and you see like with Deadmau5 with the big helmet and stuff, and the DJ as someone that's kind of a little bit removed, a little bit like you said, their spaceship, you know, like there is this sort of idea of the DJ being this like extraterrestrial person who like comes in peace with tunes and wants to bring you on like this psychedelic cosmic journey and stuff. And I love that. But I do think it is nice to kind of like have somewhere to look.
Well, you know, I mean, if you think about it, like we live in a country which doesn't really have proper nightclubs built for purpose anymore. And what that means is that like our parties take place in Japanese restaurants and places like traditional venues with high rise stages and stuff like that. So that's what happens. Or repurposed venues that work in a different way than maybe if they were designed from the ground up. So it's a big factor, and I think it's a big factor here. We don't have any of those clubs. Yeah, like this week there has been some announcements that are relating to the nighttime economy in Ireland about noise reduction for venues. Again, it's an important thing, but it's also like basically a fund available to venues for the mitigation of sound and issues around sound, which a lot of the clubs in the city, in Dublin City, have, because they, even though they might have been there first or whatever, there's a lot of people that live in the city. But like, I don't know if it's fair that if you lived in the city your entire life, or you've suddenly moved in, you're suddenly given out about a venue in the middle of Dublin City, you know. But anyway, that is there. There's a noise reduction fund available to $2 million in total, which $70,000 per venue. Now, from an ideal perspective, what you would want is the venue built from the ground up, with reduced licensing fees that are due to be brought in, which they probably won't be brought in this year by the Irish government, but the task nighttime economy task force report and the indication from the Irish government says that they were want to do these things, but they'll need to do it. The agent of change initiatives and stuff. So some of these things are in that. The nighttime economy advisors are being established or have started to be established around the country in six cities and towns in Ireland. Arts and cultural spaces, there's a fund there for the proliferation or platforming of electronic or contemporary folk music through an 800,000 fund as well. So those kind of cultural spaces can access these. But again, what we're still missing is the ability to be able to create these ideal nightclubs and to grow the actual industry and not just grow it out of things that are fit for purpose or from the start. So yeah, I think it's all part of that as well. And if we had longer opening hours and longer into the night places that could open late, you could have
public
less bottlenecks,
transport,
less pressure, less costs, then maybe that would actually help the creativity and the actual color of the music that is played and the way that it's played and the sensibilities and things. And maybe we could get back to doing stuff that would be in the spirit of Balearic music and Alfredo as well. So, yeah, that's kind of all of that. So let's say, I think the reason why I first decided to think about Balearic music was I referenced Balearic in the context of the new Peggy Goo song, because I was like, this is very Balearic. And that was me kind of engaging with, you know, what does that mean? I'm like, why am I saying that? And like, here's a bit of this song here. I don't know. I think it's just, it's one of those things where you're like, oh, it's vaguely sun-kissed and, you know, sounds good in the summer and stuff like that. So I don't know if that's literally it, but Balearic, that's what I thought Balearic was, like something, music that sounds good in the sunshine almost. But then music that sounds good in the sunshine often for me is stuff like Tribe Called Quest and things like that. So it's not like one music either. So that's, I mean, that maybe Tribe Called Quest is Balearic too.
Maybe.
Okay, if you like what you heard on this podcast, it's patreon.com/909 if you want to support us. Loads of things happening there, as we say all the time. Discord is a, we had the biggest week in Discord possibly ever, which included the Music League. We had a Music League, which was very controversial. It was about,
I was absent from the Music League last week.
Oh my God.
And my God. I was just looking through the comments. People were,
it was
going
insane.
Nuts.
Yeah. It was, everybody was tasked with picking a song, a good song from a bad artist. And some of the choices, let me say, were very controversial. Very controversial.
What was your choice?
Mine was Calvin Harris and featuring Frank Ocean, Slide, which in retrospect is not fair. Because like, actually, while I don't really like Calvin Harris, he has loads of good tunes,
got-
in fairness to him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
And I was going to pick, I was really going to pick David Guetta and Sia's Titanium. And I was like, that's a good song.
That is
but
good
you know
song.
What? I just,
Sia
like, the more I thought
had,
of it. Go on.
Sia had Chandelier, which is a great song.
Yeah, but I was thinking more of David Guetta than Sia. So it was like just one.
Okay.
But you're kind of cheating me in a way if you pick two artists or three artists, like Migos are on the Slide song as well. I think it's a really tough one. And a lot of times you're trying to
avoid someone asked
what a
me for mine
is.
Because I was absent because I was away.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone asked me
what
for
was yours?
Mine, and I said "Golden Touch" by Razorlight.
Oh yeah,
I think a really good song from a truly, truly horrendous band. But I'll always defend that song.
It's a tough one, but it's like it's so subjective, isn't it? It's so subjective.
Yeah.
Like, let's have a look at like some of the songs. Like, so there was a Chaos Merchant in the league who I won't name, but who picked the Sugar Babes, who got 0 points the way this works. So you get 10. What? Every person gets a 10 points award. Push the button.
Sorry.
Very angry about that. There's a lot of people very angry about that.
It's not even the best Sugar Babes song.
Yeah, I know. I know.
That's madness. Listen,
that happened a few times. There was also Kings of Leon was in there, but it was like Beautiful War wasn't any of the other songs that people know. The Weeknd was a choice. The Ting Tings, Hollaback Girl by Gwen Stefani. I was like, no, she has other songs. But, you know, fairness, she doesn't. Cool. She's kind of a bad artist. She's kind of mostly a bad artist, if you think about it. Based off
Cool is a great output. Song. That's what I would have put forward for her.
She has three or four like good songs. So that kind of doesn't really work. Tough. But if you have suggestions for an artist who has one good song and the rest of it is terrible, I'd love to hear from you on what that is.
Maybe we could do Discord, an episode on it.
Patreon.com. Oh, God, yeah. Oh, okay, we're going to have to put the thinking caps on for that one. But the song that won the Fluke Best Songs by Otherwise Bad Artists was Two Princes by Spin Doctors, which I think is a bit more of a one-hit wonder as opposed to...
I hate that song.
That's fair too. More of a one-hit wonder for me, though. Dakota by Stereophonics was a good shout, I thought, maybe. You know?
Yeah.
But it depends. I don't think
it's a good song, though.
This is the thing.
Stereophonics is kind of like one of those ideal bands for something. Like, if you could find a good Stereophonics song to submit for that round, I'd be like, yeah, 100%. Like, yeah, that's why I think my Razorlight shout is a good one, because they're not only a bad band, they're kind of renowned for being a bad band, but their first song.
That's the ideal situation, isn't it? A band that accidentally wrote a good song, but the rest of it is just included to be terrible. Okay, that's it from us this week. We aren't here next week because I'm away. It's summertime. It's July. I might put up an L replay for next week as well. But
yeah, in the meantime,
why not? In the meantime, thanks for listening, and thanks, Andrea, for listening to me drone on about Balearic music. And
I enjoyed it. Thank you for bringing me on this journey, Niall.
Sure. We talk to you in August. Bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.